God, that was so fucking loud. Everything got me so loud.
People asleep in here, Spider-Man.
People asleep in here.
Josh, just feel free to edit this out.
Josh, this is... where's your bathroom? Where's the bathroom at, Josh?
It's time! It's time! It's
Hyper Time to Podcast.
Welcome everyone into the Hyper Time to Podcast, and I am your host, as usual, Josh Miller, and normally I am joined by my co-host, Alan Muir, but Alan has been under the weather for the past week, and he has not been feeling great, so he wasn't up to record today, and we were supposed to have a guest who... If you had listened back to our Batman Year One episode, Graydon Webb, he was going to record with us today, but unfortunately he also got busy. And so we are going to experiment a little bit with this episode. Instead of doing it all together like we normally would, this is going to be more of a stitched-together Frankenstein sort of episode where I'm going to record one section. Alan, if he's feeling up to it, will record another. Same with Graydon. They may even be able to record together. I'm not really sure right now. This actually has all come about probably in the past hour. At the moment, it is November 20th for me, and I wanted to get out an episode for Thanksgiving. And so, at least for us here in the States, Thanksgiving is a time of... appreciation, to spend time with family, give thanks for everything that we have, all that sort of stuff. I'm not sure what everyone overseas celebrates or those just outside of the U.S. in general. Maybe nothing. I don't really know. If that is the case, then hey, here's just a random middle of the week drop for you. But for those in the U.S., this is a Thanksgiving-themed episode for everyone to check out. So basically, I wanted to have an episode where we talk more about comics, but it is a sort of thank you to things that comics have done for us or provided for us over the years. And so it might be a little bit varied. It may not be specific issues. It may not... be a character per se. It may be things outside of comics, but it will be related to comics in a sense. And so I'm not entirely sure what Alan and Graydon will talk about, but I have about four main things and then kind of two separate non-comic related things, but you'll see kind of why I'm bringing those up when I do it. So I will be the first person to talk. I have never done a one-man episode before, and so if this comes off very poorly, I do apologize, but I wanted to get something out there, and so this is going to be it.
Super Teen Extraordinaire, Freakazoids, Freakazoids, runs around in underwear, Freakazoids, Freakazoids, rescues Washington, D.C., Freakazoids, Freakazoids, and I'm something better, some team.
If you listen to our introductions episode, comics have been a part of my life since I was roughly 6 years old, and it was then that I really gravitated to Superman, more so than other characters. And this isn't necessarily a thank you to the character of Superman, but I did want to thank a lot of those 90s creators that were on Superman at the time. The Dan Jurgens, who, please go back and listen to that interview that I had with him about 0 hour. The Louise Simonsons, the Tom Grummets, Carl Kiesels, Stuart Immonens, the John Bogdanovs, all of the creative teams that were a part of Superman during that 90s run, it made me a fan. I would not be doing this podcast had it not been for those people who crafted the stories and gave me the visual appeal of who Superman is and all the villains who, quite frankly, I think helped put his rogues gallery on a level that many people do not appreciate, whether it's the Conduits or Massacres or Doomsday, Cyborg Supermans, Dominus. You know, there's so many villains that came about during that 90s run that I think are actually really cool, but will always be overshadowed. Most of them will be overshadowed by the General Zods and the Brainiacs and Lex Luthors, Metallos, and all them. But if those villains were to have more, you know, time spent in more current books, perhaps, I think people would realize just kind of how cool those characters are. But, you know, you have people like Batman and Spider-Man whose rogues galleries are often considered the best. And I truthfully believe Superman deserves to be kind of up in that running. I think he has a fantastic rogues gallery. And a lot of that comes from the 90s team. And the 90s team also did great stuff, especially during like the Reign of Superman arc, which is where I became a fan, because they gave us characters like Superboy. And Superboy is one of my favorites. The Carl Kiesel, Tom Grummet run is absolutely amazing. Whether it was their initial run that was kind of went through about issue 30, or when they came back with like the Last Boy on Earth storyline. It's fantastic. The amount of like Jack Kirby love that Carl Kiesel gave, and Tom Grummet is still one of my personal favorite artists. He always had this kind of flair to make superheroes look and appear to be as strong and commanding as they kind of should be. And I've always appreciated that. So Superboy has always been one of my favorites, partially because of that Superman team in the 90s. And same can be said for Steel, who, you know, Louise Simonson and John Bogdanov, they did a fantastic job giving John Henry Irons a character who, while he did have that Superman, you know, name attached to him, he became his own character. He's probably one of my favorite and coolest characters in the DC universe. I think he does not get utilized enough. I think he could be an amazing member of, you know, I like what Grant Morrison did with him and JLA and all that kind of stuff. And he's a fantastic character. You know, Dan Jurgens and what he did with Doomsday and Cyborg Superman. And I mean, I don't think anything I need to explain any further into that. Those are pretty big characters, and he did provide one of the biggest events in all of comics with the death of Superman. But then, you know, you had stuff like the Electric Superman, and you had stuff like, you know, the Fall of Metropolis. You had Worlds Collide, which go back and listen to that episode. There's just so much cool things that happened during the 90s that made me a fan. And so for my first thank you, I want to give it to those creative people on the books, because I would not be a fan without them. I would not be doing this podcast. I would not have continued reading comics. And so thank you. Thank you to all of those people who helped make me a fan, that were a part of the Superman team in the 90s. Check out Dexter Douglas, nerd computer ace. Went surfing on the internet and was dashed in cyberspace. He turned into the Freakazoid, who's strong and super quick. He drives the villains crazy, cause he's a lunatic. So the second thing I wanted to say were video games. Obviously, I am part of VGU.TV, which is a mostly video game kind of focused outlet. And I'd be lying if I were to say that both video games and comics were not a huge part of my life. And anyone who is a fan of both of those knows that there are quite a few comic book video games out there. A lot of them are not good, especially those early ones, but there are some really good ones out there too. So for every you know, Adventures of Batman and Robin that was based on the animated show, or, you know, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, or the Walking Dead Telltale series, or one of my personal favorites, the Death and Return of Superman story that was made into a video game. Those are fantastic. But then you also have the Batman Dark Vengeance and Superman 64 and the Young Justice or Justice League Heroes. You know, there's plenty of stinkers out there as well. But as a comic fan, being able to, well, as a comic and video game fan, being able to have kind of the best of both worlds is such a great feeling. And there are two series that I very much want to point out. And the first is the Batman Arkham games, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, and Arkham Knight. Arkham Origins is in there, but I haven't played that, so I'm hesitant to put that in there, especially since WB Games doesn't typically consider that an Arkham game. But the Arkham, while there have been games out there that people are like, yes, this is a very good licensed game, the Arkham games were seemingly some of the first where people were like, this is a game of the year contender, possibly game of the generation contender, especially with Arkham Asylum. And it gave people the idea that, like, no, these licensed games, they don't have to be bad. They don't have to be trash shovelware games that are just thrown out there for a quick and easy buck by these publishers. It can be something legitimately good. And what Rocksteady did with Batman, and, you know, really giving players both a Arkham to really explore and this kind of new identity to some of the villains and stuff, and while also sprinkling in like a ton of Easter eggs, there was one of my favorite things about those games, is just going around and being like, oh, hey, this is the, you know, this is Scarface just chilling in a glass container, or going around and the Riddler's clues like hinting at something that, hey, if you're a Batman fan, you might know this is related to, say, Firefly or Magpie or something. So stuff like that was super cool in the Arkham games. And I'm curious what their Suicide Squad is going to be like. They definitely do seem to appear to have some humor sprinkled in there. But as for like what the actual gameplay is, they haven't really shown that off. So I'm not really sure what to expect there. But Rocksteady has definitely proven that they can make great games, especially great licensed games. And so I am hopeful. But those Batman games, man, if you have not played those, please do it. Arkham Asylum is considered an amazing Metroidvania type of game. They do a fantastic job limiting where you can go in those games and getting gadgets later on. The voice cast is spectacular, especially Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy. Poison Ivy, great voice actress there, but when you are hitting her in that boss fight, it sounds a little, it makes me question the rating. It could have been more AO than anything, because even my wife was listening to that and was very curious if she was in pain or if she was having some other sort of experience. But yeah, just those Arkham games were something else. And as a video game and comic book fan, being able to experience those games was so cool. But there were also some other games that not only were important to me, but were important to my children. And so occasionally you will see this come up as a parent as to, oh, hey, I want to get my children into video games. What should I start out with? And I will always beat the drum for those Lego games, especially if the kids are into superheroes. The Lego Batman 3, less so the DC supervillain one, and Marvel Superheroes, the first one in particular, are fantastic for children. It is a great way for kids to learn how to control in those games, both movement and camera. There's like next to no punishment for losing. Your character, if you were to lose all your health, the character explodes because they're little Lego pieces, and then poof, they're right back. You may lose some Lego coins or whatever, but it's simple. It's very kind in how it treats its players, and it's a wonderful tool for kids to learn how to play video games while also having a sort of, I want to say theme, a having a franchise or an IP or whatever you want to call it that they are familiar with. And it's, the games themselves are fantastic. They're great games. It can be less so maybe for adults if you're not really into like the, hey, let's just run around and break things to earn Lego pieces that we can go and buy new characters or whatever. But it's clear that the people that make those games love these characters, that love those worlds. And, you know, whether you're playing as Superman or you are able to play as Gorilla Grodd or Silver Surfer or, you know, big names, small names, you know, hey, you don't want to play as Venom, but you want to play as a symbiote controlled civilian, you can do that. It's, they're goofy, they're funny, they're easy to play, they're just amazing experiences for kids. And so if there's any parents listening to this and you're wondering what game should I introduce my kids to, don't do the thing where you're like, oh, I played, you know, on the original Nintendo, maybe I'm going to go back and show them Super Mario Brothers. Like, you can, but if they're into superheroes, if they're into Star Wars because they have Lego Star Wars games, if they're into Jurassic Park because they have Lego Jurassic Park games, you know, find a game that they show interest in. Because if they're showing interest in it, they will gravitate towards that more and they will give it more of a chance. And those Lego games in particular, especially if they have help from an adult and they're at a younger age and, you know, because there are puzzles and stuff in there which can be a little problematic if they're too young, is such a great way to get them initiated into video games. And so for those Lego games, that is something else I wanted to give a thank you to, because it has helped connect my kids and myself in a new way. It allowed me to, you know, sit there with them and find something I can connect with them even more than stuff I already have. It was a way for them to sit with me on, you know, sit on my lap and watch me play, and then they'll want to grab the controller and play a little bit too. And, you know, I'll get up and I'll go to the TV and I'll point out to where they need to go, and I'm like, oh, hold the circle button or whatever. And so it becomes this fun dynamic of watching your kids get into a hobby that you're interested in too. Two hobbies, technically. And, you know, my watching them barely be able to function using a controller to being able to beat levels or beat entire games. It's so cool. It is so cool being able to see that and see how much that changes and seeing them not just grow as kids, but, you know, a hobby, two hobbies that I grew up loving, and being able to pass that on to them is such a good feeling. Being able to say, like, I really love this, I hope you love it too. And then showing them that and them just falling in love with it the same way I did. And they didn't have to suffer through the Bart versus the Space Mutants or the Sunsoft Superman game or any of the just trash that you could play back in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, as if you're a video game parent and you know your games, you know what's good out there. It's not like maybe what our parents were like, where they're like, oh, hey, I know my kid likes the Simpsons, or oh, hey, I know my kids like the Ninja Turtles, and they just guess those games because they associate that franchise with something we like, not knowing that those games are bad. We can typically know what games are good, or we have easy ways to find that out now. And so there are so many more ways to get these kids into the stuff that we love. And so the Lego games are one perfect avenue in doing that. And I feel like I am rambling on and I'm not sure I'm
getting any further into while of this. But yes, the Lego games are something I am so incredibly thankful for. Not because that they're just fun games, but because they were a way for me to get my kids into video games, to help them get into comics and introduce them to characters that they didn't know about that maybe they would fall in love with, such as the Hulk. My little one, he adores the Hulk. My youngest is autistic, and I think part of what I've noticed is that he really gravitates towards characters who don't necessarily talk, but are very expressive in their emotions. Hulk is obviously one of those characters who is very loud, and he doesn't really form, some versions of him don't really form like a lot of words, and his emotions are very apparent, and he loves the Hulk. It's his favorite character. And so being able to pull on the, you know, Marvel superheroes and play as the Hulk and just run around and break things, and he loves it. He loves it so much. And it gives me the greatest feeling inside knowing that I introduced him to a character and he just fell in love, and he's been crazy about the Hulk since then. But yeah, it's stuff like that that makes me thankful for just video games in general, especially the comic book games, because it's been great being able to experience them as a fan and being able to pass them on to people who very much will become fans if I haven't already made them fans as it is. But yeah, that would be my number two, is the video games with comics. The third one, I think I said I was going to do six. I'm only going to do five. Because the other one, I'm not really sure the best way for me to gush about it. But so the third thing I want to do is more current. And that would be like kind of all the digital apps that are out there now to read your books, whether it's Comixology or maybe you get your books on Amazon, even though Comixology and Amazon are kind of the same thing, are going to be even more the same thing here in the next year, or the Marvel Unlimited or DC Universe. There are so many different avenues that don't rely on you going to a comic book store, or back in my day when I was going to a grocery store and getting comics and hoping that the books were there, maybe not having access to a comic book store based on the area you're in. So you wouldn't be able to get like back issued comics, you know, not paying for comics online where they may be a little bit overpriced because, you know, it depends on the seller, shipping costs, all that kind of stuff. So all these digital apps that are out there is such a cool thing for people to have now. You know, for me personally, I have collected comics my entire life, and I've gotten to the point where I'm not sure I really want physical books anymore, both because, God, they take up so much room. They take up so much room, but they're also expensive. Like, it's expensive paying several bucks an issue unless you go for trades, which can make it cheaper, but can also go out of print. And so you're then stuck, oh, hey, do I want to buy the Trial of Superman trade paperback that you may be able to get for 30 bucks, maybe, when you could have gotten it for, like, I think it was maybe 15 when it was originally printed. So, you know, people bumping up that price because, hey, it's out of print, and if you want it, you're going to pay for it type of thing. And that's not accounting for, like, all the books that are out there that just haven't saw reprints. Like, hey, I bought those first two volumes of Green Lantern by Ron Mars. There was supposed to be a volume three. That got canceled. So now, what do I do, DC? Am I supposed to just wait and hope that you eventually do it? Or am I supposed to go find a whole bunch of out-of-print trade paperbacks in hopes that a lot of stores may have them, because guess what? In stock trades doesn't have it anymore. I would have to eBay that stuff if I can't find it in my local comic book store. So these apps where you can just pop online and boom. Hey, you want Green Lantern? Here's 167 issues of, you know, that volume that you needed. They're not perfect. There's definitely issues missing. But for the price that they offer for these apps, assuming that you're doing the subscription apps, it can't be beat. Like, why would I want to go search down, you know, one issue and pay maybe $7 for it just to maybe complete a story arc when I can pay $7 a month and read hundreds of comics, assuming I have the time to do so? It's such a revolutionary thing for a comic book fan to have something like Marvel Unlimited or DC Universe at their disposal. And you have stuff like Comixology where, yeah, you can go to a comic book store and buy a trade paperback for $14, but guess what? Marvel has it on sale for $3 on Comixology. Which one are you going to do? I know you like physical, but it's $3, and it's hard to pass up that stuff. And I hate to sit here and be like, all digital, don't get anything physical, because those comic book stores, they're helping keeping this medium alive as well by selling that stuff physical. And so do, please do go support your local comic book stores. They deserve it, you know, and I can't sit here and speak for the financial burdens or anything of it, but there have definitely been talks over the years about how it's very difficult to keep these stores alive. And I think that kind of shows by how a lot of the non-comic book stores have stopped selling comics. You know, gas stations used to do it. Grocery stores used to do it. And where are they? They're gone. You know, and so it does come down to a lot of these online retailers or these comic store, you know, specialty shops, or maybe you can find, like in the Midwest here, we have a Vintage Stock, which does like toys and CDs and movies and comics, and it's just kind of a mishmash of everything. And so there are definitely stores that will still do it, but man, it's hard to sit here and be like, don't go digital, because there are so many good things about digital, both with pricing and availability of comics. And as someone who, you know, has two kids and has a family I'm trying to raise, affordability is important now for me. I used to spend $100 or more a week on comics, you know, buying comics I wasn't even interested in, but doing it just because, you know, hey, I might get interested in this book. It looks cool enough. Maybe I'll keep reading it and we'll see. But then I had kids and responsibilities and house payments and utilities, adulting, just in general, it becomes very difficult to maintain this hobby. And doing things like DC Universe and Marvel Unlimited, the sales on Comixology, all that kind of stuff, I'm not sure if it is as beneficial to all these creators and the companies. But as a fan, as someone who loves this hobby and is looking to find ways to still support it, even if it's not as supportive as I would like to be, these are fantastic ways to do it. And so I want to thank these apps. I want to thank the Comixologies, the DC Universes, the Marvel Unlimiteds, all of these that are allowing people who may not have an easy way to get physical books, especially if they're just looking for single-off issues at a reasonable prices, or just ways to continue enjoying this hobby in general. Like, man, I would love to own everything. I would absolutely love to own everything. Technically, I'm still buying physical books, and then I'm tearing them up and having them all bound together because, hey, guess what? DC doesn't want to print trades of the entire Superboy run, but you know what? I have almost every issue, so at least the first 75 or 80 books I have bundled together and had them bound myself. They're sitting on my bookcase. But it's stuff like that where the companies don't always support the hobby as well as you would hope. And I'm not, that's not something I completely blame them as. You know, they're companies, they are trying to make a profit, and, you know, bundling some 12 issue miniseries that probably nobody remembers from the 80s or something. Why would they put in the effort and the cost to make those when it more than likely wouldn't bring a profit? So I get it. But as a fan, it kind of stinks not having that stuff available. So yes, those apps, wonderful. Thank you for having those. And I'm going to continue to utilize them. And if you're into comics, I hope you do too, because it's well worth it. So the fourth one I'm going to do, I've noticed I've already been talking for like 30 minutes or so, and I don't know how long Alan or Grayne are going to do this, so I don't want to keep it too long. But this is not so much comic related. It's more of a thank you to Alan in particular, along with VGU. In 2013, I had been just casually writing about video game stuff. I have no hopes of being in the industry. And based on how a lot of people in the industry had talked, didn't really give me any desire to be in the industry. A lot of negativity about, like, just what's expected of you and the pay and all that kind of stuff. So I just wanted to write about video games for fun. And so in 2013, I noticed a post on a message board, or no, it was a blog on IGN about, like, hey, we're a site and we're trying to write about comics, or not comics, we're trying to write about video games, send us a resume, blah blah blah, blah. And so I did. I'm like, you know, whether I get there or whether I continue writing on my WordPress or whatever, Blogger is where I was writing it on. I was like, maybe I'll just, you know, pitch something there and see if they'd be interested. And they were. And so that's how I became part of VGU. My first review was for Cloudberry Kingdom on the PS3. Anyone remember that game? Probably not. But while I was there, I met a lot of people who I would consider friends. And one of them was Alan Muir, the co-host of Hyper Time to Podcast. And, someone who's on every other podcast on VGU. And Alan has been so incredibly important to not just the site, but to my interest in continuing to do stuff like this. Hyper Time in general has been something that I've had on my mind for years now, and I had wanted to do for a long time. I'm one of those people who I can think about it, and I can think about it, and I can think about it, but that's where it stops. I never do it. And if I am motivated enough to do it, the problem is continuing to do it. Alan pushed me to continue doing the things I enjoy doing. I had stopped writing about video games for a while, and I had had the itch to do it again. And Alan was part of the previous site, and he basically told me, like, hey, just, you know, come write. Like, I don't mind, just come over and do it. And so I did, and that continued, and, you know, things happened that led to VGU being reformed. And while I was here, I was like, you know what, I've had that idea for a comic book podcast where I go back and talk about old comic stuff that I want to discuss and research, and maybe I'll do it. And I mentioned it to Alan. And then after I mentioned it, I put it off like I always do. And I continue to put it off. And Alan kept bringing it up. Alan kept letting me know, like, hey, are you still planning on doing that comic book podcast? And he's done this to other people too. Other people who are part of the site who have, like, talked about different ideas we've had. And Alan remembers them. Alan has always been extremely supportive of everything all of us do there. And he's always pushing us to just get it out of our heads, make it a real tangible thing in this world. And without him, this podcast would not exist. And I know I've already said that about like the 90s Superman crew and everything, but quite literally, Alan is the reason this podcast exists, because he continued to push me. He continued to bring it up and force my hand to just do it. Just go on Free Music Archives and pull up a song and, hey, I like this song. Maybe I'll make this for an intro. But I need a name. What can I use a name for, you know? And just continue snowballing. Every time I was like, I don't know if I should continue doing this, Alan would come along and he just give me that extra nudge. He just kicked that little snowball and then keep it going. He has been the heart of VGU. He is the heart of Hyper Time. Alan is hands down one of the nicest and most genuine people that I have ever met. And I am so thankful to call him a friend and, well, and a co-host, obviously. But I wanted to take a moment to say thank you. I don't know if he's going to listen to this or not, but I wanted everyone who listens to this to know just how important Alan is to not just the site, but this podcast, and to me, to give all of us not just an outlet to get our interests out and all of that, but you know, he helps bring all of these things out in us. And even if we don't think it's good enough, he'll kind of foster that with us. And he'll talk it through with us. And if we're not sure about something, he'll give us different ideas. He'll propose his own ideas if need be. And he very much seems to be someone who thinks that if there is something that we have in our heads, it's worth getting out to the world. Maybe the world won't listen to it or see it or anything, but at least it'll be out. We can't say we didn't do it. We can't say we didn't get underway or anything. So it's out there. And Alan has been such a great help in doing that. And so I did want to take part of this episode to thank Alan. Thank you, Alan. If you are listening to this, thank you for doing everything that you have done for the site, for me, for this podcast. I cannot thank you enough. And I hope everyone who's listening to that will get an idea of just how great of a person you are for helping all of us push ourselves and to give us that push we need when we need it. Because, God, I have needed a lot of pushing over the years. And I'm so happy you gave me that push to finally put this podcast out of my mind and onto my laptop, into the, you know, onto Anchor, onto Buzzsprout, onto the website itself, just onto YouTube's, everything, to finally get it out of my head and continuing to give me ideas that I want to talk about on this podcast or things I want to write about on the site, all of that sort of stuff, all that comes because you have continued to be such a great help in making it a thing, for making it real. So, Alan, thank you so much. So, the last thing that I wanted to talk about, the last thing I want to thank, is obviously the cheap pop, the easy thing to talk about, and that is for anyone listening. I'm not going to lie, we don't have a ton of listeners, but there are people listening to this. There are people who are actively downloading this and taking the time out of their day to be like, you know what, I want to hear about this topic. Or maybe just like the sound of my voice. I don't really, no, I'm not going to fool myself. I know you don't like the sound of my voice. But having someone who thinks that what I put out there is worth listening to, that what I have to say actually somewhat matters, that maybe what I'm talking about isn't just a complete waste of time, that the time and effort I put into compiling pages and pages of notes for each episode isn't just a complete waste, it feels really good. So I don't know everyone who's listening. I see some of the stats. I put Hyper Time out as a separate podcast because if something were to happen with VGU, I still want to have, you know, complete control of it. But I also put it out on VGU, and it also goes on YouTube. And I don't pay attention to the stats on YouTube, or, well, I don't have availability to the stats on the VGU podcast. But the one that I put out myself under the Hyper Time podcast feed, I can see like how many are listening. I can see where they're coming from. I can say about 75% of the people listening are in the US, and there's, yeah. So pulling up the geographic location of my listeners, based on Anchor's, thing that came up, 76% of people are in the US, 15% is in Germany, 6% is in the UK, 2% is in Canada. I think I actually know. My guess is there's probably only one person there, but I think I know who it is. And less than 1%, how that even works, I don't know, is in Australia. It feels really weird knowing that my voice is out to other countries and that someone there is listening to it. But the fact anybody is willing to listen to my voice, I feel bad for my wife half the time having to listen to my voice. It is incredibly meaningful to me that anyone finds what I have to say important, and that, again, the time I put into this podcast, even if I can't get it out on time sometimes, or I have to push back how many episodes I do a month, that it's worth it to people. It's great knowing that this isn't a complete waste of time for me. So this thank you is just to anyone who listens, anyone who takes the time to download this podcast and give it a listen to hopefully get some sort of enjoyment from it. I hope you do. I hope you learn something. I hope maybe you find out about a topic or a creator or something and you're like, maybe I want to check that out if you haven't already, and reach out and find out, you know, learn about that or read the book or whatever. I hope it's not just I'm going to turn this on in the background while I play Forza or something. You know, I don't want to be your background noise. I'm hoping it's something that you actively enjoy listening to. But even if it's not, I still appreciate just taking the time downloading an episode, because there's plenty of stuff out there, plenty of podcasts to download. And the fact that you may have picked this one to even take up 5 minutes of your day, maybe you just check out the beginning and the end, I don't know. Any downloads, any amount of time listening to this means so much to me. And so for my last thank you, before I pass this on to Graydon or Alan, just thank you. Thank you all so much for downloading this, for making me feel like Hyper Time is something worth continuing. And hopefully I'll continue to put out stuff that you enjoy. I'm trying really hard to make sure I get at least one episode a month. I'm hoping to improve that come next year. But we'll see. Life gets in the way. But again, thank you all. I cannot say it enough. I cannot stress enough how much it means to me. And if this is, you know, I don't know if Graydon and Alan are going to continue on or not, but if this is the last of it, I just want to say I hope you all have a great week. I hope you all take care, and yeah, I will see you further down the Hyper Time.
I want to be the very best, like no one ever was.
Okay, so yeah, so here are the things that me and Graydon are thankful for, like the pieces of comic media, various media, and I'll go first with a quick one, and that is the Pokemon Adventures manga, which is a lot not what I expected in the best way. When I first got back into Pokemon after a long absence, despite buying a bunch of the games, I was worried that it was going to be like when I got back into Yu-Gi-Oh! And I went full on. In my desk, I have at like a eBay package thing full of Yu-Gi-Oh cards that will probably go unused. I just don't have the heart to destroy them.
Jeez.
And but before that, I think, or around the same time, I bought the like 3-in-1 like combo issue manga of the Yu-Gi-Oh manga. And have you seen? You've seen Yu-Gi-Oh, right?
Yeah, I used to love it. I played the card game. I played the video, some video games.
Okay, you know how, like, do you know anything about the actual Yu-Gi-Oh?
Well, when you said that Pokemon had a manga, I was surprised. So I'm just as surprised that Yu-Gi-Oh had one too. Is it based off of one?
Yeah. It's a real shame Raul isn't here because they just. Like they just drop knowledge bombs. Yu-Gi-Oh is a Shonen Jump joint.
Okay.
Which is in and of itself, I think, Viz Media. Viz Media is involved somehow because Raul mentioned the app with the really low subscription rate or subscription amount. Didn't mean rating because. We're not throwing shade at all. This is positive. Friend. So when I first read the Yu-Gi-Oh manga, I hate using this phrase because it feels like a trope, but it's sort of true because it kind of did. Kind of ruined my childhood.
Oh no.
Yeah, because I had so many precious memories of Yu-Gi-Oh. Like watching it every Saturday morning, every Saturday morning, I'd go with my dad to local bank, just to spend time with him to go with him because check put deposited, and we go to a convenience store that was nearby the bank, and I would buy or I would ask him if he could get me like it was a weekly routine, and I would get Yu-Gi-Oh cards every week.
Aw.
And the school I went to was a bad one. I didn't realize that at the time, but it was like bad from the beginning. And my Yu-Gi-Oh cards that I carefully collected got stolen.
Oh.
And I'll try to find the episode of when where I mentioned that's the story.
Oh, yeah, you did tell the story.
Yeah. Alan has sad stories.
Oh,
But the Yu-Gi-Oh manga was, or is kind of, it doesn't really align well with what you'd expect after watching the anime and playing the games.
Huh.
Or at least the English version, because that's, the English version is very PG, whereas the manga is not.
Mm.
At the very least, it's like PG. At the most, it could be, it's like just insane. Like there are certain manga tropes that certain manga suffer from, or I won't say suffer because people writing it probably they enjoy what they do.
Someone's just enjoying it.
Someone, but the Pokemon manga, Pokemon Adventures. I heard the phrase nostalgia bombs. I think it was a Kyle Hebert review, or not review, interview with Ben from Ben Hansen from at the time Game Informer, now MinMax. And the phrase nostalgia bomb was used to describe like the Dragon Ball Z movies, which would then lead people to back to Z and then to all the other stuff, which. Pokemon, that fateful day where we discovered it, was a giant nuclear nostalgia bomb that I'm still chasing. And the Pokemon Adventures begins with the titular character of Red, of Pokemon Red, who is the canonical, he's sort of like the chosen one, sort of. Because he completely dismantles Team Rocket in with the, like at the beginning or at the end of the first like the first box set. Like by the time if you ever play Pokemon Gold or Silver or Crystal, there's a character who mentions that Team Rocket was disbanded by Giovanni, and okay. you encounter a certain character in Pokemon Gold or in Gen 2 who is affiliated with Giovanni, and you have a double battle, like 2v2 with, and you're teaming up with Red. And it's been a long time since I played Pokemon Gen 2, but it's really good storytelling. The art in the Pokemon manga is amazing. Josh, feel free to put that in. Or I feel terrible asking you to put in the show notes the creative teams for the first for the main manga, because the current team is taking a break because the writer is suffering from medical issues. So, buy the Pokemon Adventures manga because it's just so good. They have box sets for like each gen, and like I said, the art's amazing. The writing is great. Brayden, have you ever heard of what Pokemon was like? It was called in Japan.
Pocket monsters, right?
Close. Capsule monsters.
Capsule monsters, like the little machines that they have, the little capsule things.
Yeah. In the manga, like Pokemon Adventures, the Pokemon are drawn when they're in the Pokeball. The Pokeball is transparent or clear.
Oh wow!
So you can actually see like the tiny miniaturized version of the Pokemon in what looks like, and what is it like in a capsule?
Like a capsule. That's cute.
And yeah, it's really creative ways to like mess with the. What you don't see in Pokemon series and games, because frankly put, people just they just want to see the Pokeballs. I see what you did. Going for that low hanging fruit.
I just want to see those Pokeballs. Pokemon, gotta catch 'em all. Our hearts are true. Our courage will pull us through. You teach me, and I'll teach you.
What are you thankful for?
Okay. Let's see. Let me consult my list. Oh man, which one do I want to go? Were they just in no order or worst to best?
Oh, I'm just going like down my list.
Okay.
That's what I'll be doing, so.
Then I guess I will start with one that I think is kind of a no-brainer. I'm thankful for Telltale Games, because over the years, they have like I'm not much of a comic reader. I obviously have some stuff. I'm here, but I'm not here every week because I'm not that much of a comic reader. And Telltale has created some really cool comic adaptations over the years. I would say rest in peace to them, but they are back in a way, and
well,
they're
back in the same way that VGU is back, like
so better. I can't say that.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to give some context. Josh Miller and I host Josh, the host of the show. He and I wrote for VGU, formerly VGU.com or VGUtopia.com. And by the time we had joined, I'm the most senior person of the staff, mainly due to the fact that I joined I joined a few months before Josh. Actually, I joined right at the beginning of 2013, which is ironic. And by the time we were here, it was VGU.TV, and BGU.TV ended in like 2015, 2016. And if you listen to any of the podcasts on this feed, you'll know that we all worked for a different place prior to this. And it was I'm not one to believe in luck, but we found good fortune. We got the domain. I still had a bunch of the assets, and yeah.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, I think you've kind of been calling this VGU 2.0 for a while, right?
Yeah. I'm not calling the site VGU 2.0 because that would just, the slogan for the site is honoring the past, embracing the future. So
yeah,
think of that what you will.
Indeed. So yeah, in a similar way, Telltale has kind of been revived from the ashes in a different context, like that, obviously not entirely the same team, not the same, like, they don't have all their IP intact, but they...
Sort of.
They have a good majority of it, and
go ahead.
We just haven't seen anything really from them yet. But go ahead.
I was going to say that they're working with Adhoc, which is comprised of some of the, like, the core Telltale team.
Oh, like, okay.
I want to say Pierre Charette is one of the developers.
Hmm.
While you talk, I'll look up the Adhoc team.
Okay.
Just to be safe.
So yeah, so they're obviously working on some stuff. Currently, they're making Wolf Among Us Season 2. But yeah, that's kind of like why I'm thankful for them, is they have introduced me to a lot of cool IP through the years. Obviously, I knew Walking Dead, but they put a spin on it that, like, just changed the world, so to speak. They brought Fables into the limelight with Wolf Among Us. They had their own spin on Batman. They had their own spin on Guardians. And they just, I'm trying to remember if there was anything else, but I think those were their comic things.
Which ones?
Guardians, Batman, Fables, and Walking Dead. That was it, right? It's like Game of Thrones doesn't count as comics, and none of their other stuff, I don't think. I mean, I guess they did do a Strong Bad game, which was a web comic, right?
Yeah. Strong, gotta love Strong Bad.
So they pioneered a medium in a way of this kind of narrative interactive games, and they chose comic books, which was really smart because it was just a way to kind of continue stories with story being the main focus. And I just think that it was done really brilliantly. Obviously, a lot of people love these games. Certain ones were like Game of the Year nominees and different little, like Wolf Among Us has been highly anticipated for years. And yeah, they were a very smart company that did some awesome stuff for the world of comics. And as someone who doesn't read a whole lot of stuff, like, I just knew kind of the basics of, I don't know, say Batman or Guardians. All I know is like their movie things, but I was able to kind of get more of a feel for their world and the things in it. And it was just a lot of fun. So I miss those games, and thankfully they're coming back eventually. But yeah, Telltale is definitely on my list of things in terms of the comic book world that I am thankful to have had in my life.
Okay. Well, while you were talking, I was searching.
Yes.
And a couple of the people I forgot to mention: Dennis Lenart, Michael Chung, Nick Herman, and as I mentioned, Pierre Charette. So these weren't just like regular, like, executives, because you rarely see a dev team made up of only executives. These were all former like creative roles, like writer, mainly writing. So, and they have, if I recall, they're working with multiple teams to have like the writing be one team, having the engine be a different team, and having the gameplay be another team. I could be wrong. I'm mostly wrong about these things. So shall we jump to the next thing I'm thankful for?
Yes, I would love to hear it.
So this is a show that debuted earlier this year on the CW. And if you know anything about me, it's pretty clear what this show is. That show is Superman and Lois.
Ah, yes, yes. I do know you were big into that.
Yeah, I was very big on Smallville back in the day. Well, I still am.
Yeah, you're a big Smallville person.
And after after seeing former Clark Kent or former Superman, technically more Clark Kent than Superman, and your personal rival Tom Welling.
If I see him in the streets, it's on sight.
Yeah, you'll just Superman punch him, and he won't even flinch. In fact, you'll get shot into space as a result.
I mean, I got bumped and it didn't do a thing to me, so I think I'm impenetrable. We'll just leave that there.
Yeah, leave that there. This show follows the chronology of Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 4, like the ending, which was Superman flying through Earth Prime. Earth 1. And Lois contacts him, says, "The boys have made a mess." And Superman is confused because at the beginning of the crossover, he had only one kid, who was Jonathan, and was a baby. But
little
some
baby Jonathan.
Just a quick little aside. Apparently, so. Did you watch the Crisis, like crossover,
the Arrowverse thing?
Yeah.
I saw little bits and pieces because my dad was like, "Oh, look at this! This is the part where they get the table. Oh, look at this! This is the part where."
I love your impressions of your dad.
Overall, I don't know much about Arrowverse things, so I didn't like sit down and watch it all.
Ironically, it's not like not a lot is like need to be. You don't need to know a lot about the comics or the shows.
Like, oh, they, it just was good standalone.
Yeah, especially to the point where they actually put it out. Like, I think it was on Legends of Tomorrow or Supergirl. It was Arrow season 8 on the Blu-ray. They put the entire 4 or 5 part like thing on its own.
Oh.
So you wouldn't have to go through like each individual show and like line up everything like you would reading a comic crossover.
Okay.
But one of the like subplots is Jonathan gets lost in an alternate timeline.
Like, okay.
Like a different Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Earth from Legends of Tomorrow season 1 that they go to Star City 2046, because the show that episode that they're drawing from aired in 2016, so like 30 years later.
Oh.
And one of the dropped threads that was going to be tied in was Jonathan was going to be aged up through that experience of being in a different time. But they didn't stick with it because it'd be like it'd be hard to, just hard to explain, because why isn't he, like, why isn't his birthday lining up with the shows? You just have to say comics. Comics chicanery.
You see, comics.
And this show was done, or was bankrolled by HBO Max.
Ah. But
it has connections to the Arrowverse, but isn't on the point, like, it has a much bigger budget than any of those shows on the CW.
Hmm.
So it's obviously with a budget that is probably multiple times that of its peers. You'd expect it to be good, and it was, or is. And it's just, after Smallville ended in 2010, there's literally a decade of Superman stories, good and bad, that you could tell, that they sort of told on Supergirl. Like, obviously, the Lex Luthor, Hank Henshaw, Leviathan. But that was, in my opinion, that's actually its Superman and Lois's greatest strength, is that it doesn't need what everyone knows to work, like, to make it work. So they took a character, they took a new 52 character. I think his name was Hell, like literally H apostrophe L. And he was sort of, he was basically an adopted brother of Superman.
His name is H apostrophe L.
It was like 2012, 2013. They were really trying to be edgy.
Oh my God.
I forget if it was Action Comics or the solo Superman title that introduced him.
Seems to be Solo New 52.
Yeah, and that book took a while for that book to catch on.
Superman Hell on Earth.
Yeah, and by catch on, I mean, when I say it took a while, I mean like 4 or 5 years. Like, basically by the, when Gene Liu and Yang took over the book, it got better. Ironically, even though Geoff Johns, who was like the man of DC at the time, he couldn't make it work. But we're going over time. Simply put, it's a lot of bang for its buck, and there are a lot of twists and turns. It has the DNA of the Superman Rebirth stuff, which was parent Superman, like parent Kal-El. And it sort of turns it on its ear by having another son, Jordan, named after Jor-El, as Jonathan is named after Jonathan Kent. And I won't say which character has powers, because that's the one thing everyone was speculating about. So you should be able to find Superman and Lois on HBO Max. So go find it, binge it, enjoy it. They're going to be back. I imagine they'll be back some point next, like the beginning of next year at most. So.
Yeah. And I didn't watch that show, but I did see a lot of people talking online about how he's just a very good portrayal of Superman.
Yeah. So. The opening scene of the series, which is him, like a montage of his, like quick cuts of his origins, his background. It's actually taken from an issue, I think, from a comic. I think it was. Josh, if you by chance know which. Which issue and what series, just mention, like, it's actually this. Please do something like that, or just leave it and it'll just be a nice little gag. But there's he saves a kid while wearing his Fleischer, or his like 1930s suit. Which, if you look that up, it's very beautiful, and like, especially in the animated style of the 30s, or like the 30s, 40s. And he saves the kid. He says, and the kid says, thanks. Nice outfit or a nice suit or a nice costume. And he says, and Superman says, thanks. My mom made it and flies off.
Yeah, that's the clip that I saw.
It's just wonderful.
It's so cute. It's like that.
That's what Superman is. It's not a stoic character who snaps the neck of a villain. It's not a character who causes disastrous events.
Right.
That's Doomsday. Or his medical counterpart, Dr. Doomsday. that's a deep cut.
What?
Just look up Amalgam Comics after this.
Oh my god, what the fuck did I just look up?
Okay.
Up in the sky, look!
It's a bird!
It's a plane! It's Superman!
All right. My number two is a little weird, but my number three is like good, so I wanted to save it. But my number two, I guess I'm thankful for, and it sucks because I really wanted to like double check and see if these things are on there, but I believe they are. So I was just going to blanket be thankful for Disney Plus because of things like my main idea was Disney XD and the fact that it had like all these comic book cartoons that I got like really into. I was super into the Ultimate Spider-Man show and watched the hell out of that for pretty much my whole high school years. Like I watched that show religiously.
Was that the one with the felon?
Yes, with the felon. Yes.
Ironically, like Paul Dini, you know who Paul Dini is. Everyone knows.
I know that name.
He's infamous for working on. He wrote the story for the first two Arkham games.
Okay.
He was a writer for Batman the Animated Series.
All right.
He was a writer. He's one of the most iconic names in comics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a graphic novel, like an OGN, like original graphic novel of like a mugging that, like a mugging slash assault that happened to him in like 30 years ago, mm-hmm. or nearly 30 years ago, that is jarring and like emotionally like difficult to read.
Oh.
In a good way. Like he's recalling the events that took place, and Batman is there, like mm-hmm. he's there in his subconscious.
Is it called Dark Knight: A True Batman Story?
Yes, it is. It is great.
Huh.
That was actually back when I wrote for Lost Sorrow. That was one of my picks for our holiday gift guide. And
yeah, it only came out in 2016.
And that was actually when I like hardcore got back into comics.
Huh.
Like back into actually buying them like physically again instead of digitally. And it was around like the whole thing happened, like the event happened around the time they were gonna do, I think, Mask of the Phantasm.
Okay.
I think it has to be that one, because there's moments where he, like the higher ups of the show, like Bruce Timm, just to name one person I know was had to have been there, like they were prepping for the Mask of the Phantasm theatrical release.
I think I saw that movie.
It was wonderful.
I remember liking it.
And yeah, just a funny aside that when Disney decided to do like a show of like a animated form show of their iconic character, they got they got literally the perfect person to head up the show. So, sorry for that long-winded response.
No, I was like, I fell down a wiki well trying to like.
I love when that happens.
Trying to figure out how that all like mixed together. And in the midst of finding that out, through some 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon type shit.
Did you find a gift guide?
No, okay. I found something even better. Did you know that Ben 10 of Ben 10 was voiced by Tara Strong?
I'm not surprised.
Did you?
She's a prolific voice actress.
Oh, she's fantastic.
She was great on a Big Time Rush.
She's very nice in person too. But I didn't know that she was I didn't know that Ben 10 like sounded kind of like, I don't know, like a lady. I can't recall Ben 10's voice.
Okay, what? So no, because my like the third like my final thing that I'm thankful for.
Yeah.
Is gonna lean into that heavily.
Oh my god.
So okay. It's perfect that you bring that up.
So all right,
so go ahead and I'll just sit back here with my hands behind my head.
So I'll just I don't know. It's a very small thing, my second thing. It's just that like I believe you can go and watch all these shows on Disney Plus now. I do for reasons I won't say the name, but I guess but I will stand by Ultimate Spider-Man is one of my favorite Spider-Man. It's a very good depiction.
I thought you're just repeating like it's just like Ultimate Spider-Man is my Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Man. Thanks Spider-Man.
People try to sleep here, Spider-Man. And
I completely forgot for a second that was our opening bit.
That was our opening bit. Callback. Now Josh has to keep it in. But yeah, I really like that show. It introduced me to a ton of fucking characters that I didn't like know about, like Web Warrior stuff and learning about Iron Spider, White Tiger, got me to like Iron Fist. Like these people like I really enjoyed these characters and what they did and the way that they like their takes on villains that I enjoy and villains that I don't enjoy. And so, I mean, but that's just the tip of the iceberg is Ultimate Spider-Man. Cause then you've got like Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And then there's
the classics from the '90s and yeah, the 2000s.
Yeah, sure. There's all of those things. And the original that
possibly. There's this Fantastic Four show where Mr. Reed has a gun, or he just has it, like he's holding it, and Magneto says like, "Foolish, cute person, I'm gonna destroy that." And he tries it so hard that he overdoes it, and he like over like just fatigues himself hardcore, and Reed goes, and this is while after Magneto accepted defeat and was near police who probably had guns, where Reed just says, I didn't do anything. This is a wooden gun I painted. if you just look up Magneto wooden gun, it's just top notch. And also, I just want to make just a little casual recommendation because it's great. Because it's a callback to an earlier Players Club episode or somewhat recent Players Club. X-Men Evolution.
Yes. Wait. Oh, X-Men. Wait, I was thinking of your horrible X-Men Destiny.
No.
X-Men Evolution is great. That's the one that had like Toad and stuff in it.
Well, every X-Men stuff recently has Toad in it, but
well,
X-Men Evolution is like the contemporary setting of them all being in high school.
Yes.
And God of War, Kratos voices Magneto, and it's wonderful.
Oh, yep. I remember.
You have a triumphant black voice voicing a Jew. The most badass Jew since Jesus.
Wow. You heard it here, folks. That has been proclaimed.
That's just going to be a box quote. Or just quote a web quote.
The most badass Jew since Jesus. Oh my god. I mean, you're not wrong. Jerry Seinfeld doesn't belong in there. But yeah, so that's Disney Plus. And I mean, on top of it, you've got, I was just looking for shows and I found that they have like, they have every Marvel like MCU movie separated into its phases. Like if you've never broken it down and watched those films, like that's the best way to see them. And they just updated a bunch of movies to have like IMAX viewing, which I don't even know what that means.
Okay. But I'm not going to explain that. If I did, it would probably be more time. That would be on the cutting room floor.
It's better.
I watched the beginning of Guardians Volume 2 with the IMAX setting, and it was incredible.
Really? It looks better?
If your TV can handle it, which sounds like a pretty snobby thing to say.
Yeah, like what does it need? Like, is it a higher frame rate? Is it a
higher frame rate, higher quality?
So my TV can't do 120 hertz. It can only get to 60. Will it be worth it?
It should be.
Okay. I'll have to give it a shot. But I would watch the first Guardians intro because that... Well, it's not the intro, is it? It's the... Yeah, no, it is. When he sings. When he dances all around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can just... I was going to spoil Endgame.
But... Oh, shit. I bet that would look great.
I mean, it's on there, so it's on that. In that, like, curated panel
with the portals. Oh my god!
Oh, you spoiled it.
What? Oh, come on! That didn't even mean anything. No one even knows what that means.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, considering the times we live in, that movie's been binged at least 50, like 500 times.
Yeah, and everybody knows that there's time travel. Come on. Okay, Josh, edit it out. Josh, you make the executive decision. If you think that no one has seen Endgame by now, what, 3-year-old movie at this point? 2 years?
Two years.
Okay. If you think that they...
Fun fact about Avengers Endgame. The dystopic New York scenes were shot during the pandemic. Time travel.
Oh my god.
No, that's just something that I thought of and just thought, man, that would fit. But they could just totally tell someone, like a kid, that and they'll just think it's true.
I thought you were going to say that they were like filmed in your backyard or something. Be like, what? Really?
Juan the Russos is in the movie talking about the Mets. Gotta love the Mets.
Oh, gotta love those Mets. Come on, baby. Home run, baby. Let's go, Mets. What's your third thing you're thankful for?
Okay, so going back to why anime characters... Mainly male anime characters have female voices. My third thing is sort of like a one broad thing that I'm trying to cover, like three phases, and that is Dragon Ball / Dragon Ball Z / Dragon Ball Z TFS, which is Team Four Star, like Dragon Ball Z abridged. I don't know if you listened to the episode of Players Club prior to the most recent one, where we mentioned Toonami Stream.
Yes.
So I've been catching up a lot on Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball in general. And I forgot how great that show is. And the reason I brought up that why anime characters have female voices, Gohan, Goku, Goten. In the beginning, they all, like, when they were young, they, like, it's kind of hard to distinguish whether, like, a young male character is, like, it's, what I think they're trying to go for is, like, authenticity by having, like, because the voice doesn't have, like, more bass, because, like, the characters haven't reached puberty yet, they get a female voice actor, because that's honestly how, that's how male voices sounded.
Mm-hmm.
Or some would say it still sounds like that, which reminds me of a bit from Super Best Friends talking about the 40 something grandmas that voice Goku over the years. And I don't mean like 40 something year old, over 40 grandmas have voiced Goku in one way or another.
What?
Yeah, and I've also, like, if you want to just laugh your ass off, watch Dragon Ball Abridged or Dragon Ball Z Abridged. It's an abridged series, which means that it's parody.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, open to interpretation. So I was recommended a video, it was the Toonami Aftermath stream, where I saw a character, a Namekian character, the super high guru, or super elder, or the elder guru on Namek, was saying to a character named Dende, who my sister walked in on me watching the videos, and she said, she made the accurate comment saying that Dende is better in Abridged because he has more personality, which is very true.
Because she knows.
Well, she's very much a fan of theirs. Like, she's been following them for much longer than I have.
Ah.
Like, they have Dende as a... They took a very, like, 2D. I'm not saying that because of, like, the animation, because he's physically 2D. But having taken that character, like, taking a character that didn't have much development there, and having him have a raging hard on for Gohan.
Oh no.
But that all stemmed from me seeing the clip of, or a video of, the elder guru of Namek sing na 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 Dende. Dende, Dende. And then a character named Nail shows up, and Dende goes, "Nail's here," and you just the guru just sings, "Nail." So it's just it's been, as things are changing, like getting somewhat better, things are getting like worse all the time, and it's, well, something that's been just, like, distracting me from things and helping me, like, find humor, find, like, a good laugh, which is hard to find these days.
So. Yeah. No, that's good. You gotta showcase things like that, especially in this day and age.
Yeah, so...
Everything is shit.
What is your third?
My third and final thing that I am thankful for in the realm of comics is probably no secret to anybody, but I am thankful for Robert Kirkman.
And oh, you mean Bobby Hollywood?
Bobby Hollywood himself. The man with the best beard in the business. He doesn't actually. The Skybound editor Big Clutch has a better beard than Robert Kirkman's, but I digress. Yeah, I was thinking, like, do I want to be thankful for Walking Dead? Do I want to be thankful for Skybound? Do I want to be thankful for Image?
Or Invincible? Just like,
well, yeah, or well,
Super Dinosaur.
Honestly,
or Marvel Zombies.
Or Marvel Zombies. Yeah, like, we'll start with Marvel Zombies, that Robert Kirkman
Actually, I think that was, I don't know, I keep forgetting whether or not that was pre or like before Walking Dead, or I think it was.
That was after.
Yeah, it was after, because
I want to say it was 06 when we looked it up.
Yeah. I think it was iFanboy. They referenced that, like when they bring in Kirkman, they mainly give him Marvel Zombies. Also, Robert Kirkman has some of the greatest interviews with iFanboy. Like, there are two Comic-Con, both San Diego and New York, 2011, knocked it out of the effing park, because they're doing bits the entire interview. It's like the first in the San Diego Comic-Con interview is him being Bobby Hollywood and just being it's just his wacky self. And the New York Comic-Con one is him just talking about how everyone's just getting pee everywhere at New York Comic-Con. And how there are moments where I just realize I'm not moving. There's no way I'm going forward. And then there's also the one of his famous sayings: "We're flipping all the switches, changing the game."
He does say that. We're flipping all switches.
Yeah, great. And I'll send you some stuff after we're
done. Please do. Yeah, I mean, the Robert Kirkman, he needs no introduction. Seems like a genuinely awesome dude. And what I love about him is just he really just loves geek culture. I listened to a great podcast. There was one day I listened to a couple different podcasts he was on, one of them being he talked about like his top three favorite movies for IMDb. And he talked about, it's kind of what got me wanting to watch Evil Dead, because he mentioned Army of Darkness. He went on this giant rant about how Speed Racer is just like a perfect film and no one gives it credit.
Well, because the Wachowskis. Wait, we're talking about the live action one, right?
Yeah.
The Wachowskis, they understood the assignment with that one.
But the viewers didn't.
The critics didn't. The box office, like the audience didn't, but the real people who were searching for something got what they wanted with Speed Racer.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it, but I hear more things these days about it being great than I did at the time.
It has Emil Hirsch at the height of his fame.
I forgot about him. The hell did he do?
Also has what's his face, Jack from Lost, or La Brea 1.0.
What does that even mean?
I'll explain it when we're done recording.
Like, I'm lost on that.
You're lost on Lost.
I'm lost on Lost. But yeah. And then this year has just been huge. There's been he's got, oh my god, so many fucking concurrent books. Outcast ended. Oblivion Song's going on, Firepower's going on, and not to mention the three Walking Dead shows. Invincible got a show.
He
brought back Clementine. She's getting a book all her own as well. That Rick Grimes thing is getting a release next year, like a standalone one.
It is?
Yeah, they're gonna have the whole story of Rick Grimes 2000 or whatever it's called, 3000, I forget.
Rick Grimes 3000 sounds like a rapper.
Yeah,
like, or like a rapper in the sense, and the like, or a musician in the vein of Andre 3000.
I've yet to read it, but apparently it's good. But yeah, Skybound also had its 10 years. Excuse me, had its 10 years this year, and that with it came they had a mini series of books that brought back a bunch of different characters and series, and that is a company founded by him as well. And I kind of wanted to mention them with the Telltale thing because they were responsible for finishing off Telltale Walking Dead. So, like, just so much of my life wouldn't be a thing if not for him. And that's genuinely true. Walking Dead, obviously, my love of it started with the show, but I started that right at day one. And we are now going into, I believe, 11 years later. And that's just...
Oh, my God.
It's just insane.
Oh, man. 11, literally 11 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, God. 11 years ago, I was still in high school.
It is half of my life. It is like... it's just...
God. I was 17. I was 16, 17, 11 years ago.
I know. It's ridiculous. And then, obviously, I read the books, and now I'm currently... working through, I mean, I'm reading all those series, and I'm reading Invincible as well, and it's just crazy, and that's getting a second season. There is just so much, and so many posters in my room. So much money has gone to that goddamn Walking Dead poster to get so many fucking signatures. Like, it's me. It's Walking Dead is at the heart of who I am. No, go ahead.
Okay, so I don't know if you've heard of a show that was on EMC for a while, or a short while. It was when they were trying their let's have big creators like of across the board. Let's give them shows that are like big thinking stuff with other big with other stuff. Like they had I think it was James Cameron had a show.
James Cameron.
Or it was a filmmaker who had a show where there's I'm blanking on it right now, but I'll find it and send it to Josh so he can talk about it. It was basically a show where they had like iconic directors, writers talking about it, iconic films like they had. James Cameron on, or James Cameron doing something. Yeah, I think it was James Cameron. I'm very, very certain it was James Cameron's show.
It was fucking James Cameron. he was there, I swear.
He shot Spider-Man.
People are trying to sleep.
I think it was James Cameron's History of Movies or something. Something like that.
I'm just going to look this up. James Cameron's Story of Science Fiction.
Okay, yeah, it was that.
You got George Lucas, you got Spielberg.
Yeah, like he had Lucas discussing like the politics and like everything that influenced Star Wars and his thoughts on like on both the prequels and the original trilogy and then the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to get into like the prequels are really good. Because they are.
They are. Yeah, they are, yeah.
But
yeah.
But going back to Robert Kirkman had a show on AMC.
Yeah, the horror one, right?
No, not that one.
Oh.
Robert Kirkman's Secret History or Secret Story History of Comics.
Oh, yes, yes.
I adore that show.
Yeah.
I think it was only one season.
Yep, one season, 2017. I remember this.
Yeah, it was back when I was trying to squeeze the rock or blood from the rock. Like to try to just soak up any information I could about comics history, because like there are books out there and interviews, but even Josh has mentioned that like it's hard to find information for certain things that he's researched for the show. There's a great, I think the first episode is of Fantastic Four. And I learned a lot watching that episode. Like, just that episode on its own. And, yeah, just that show. I could go on for days about that show. How good it is.
Yeah, I sadly didn't watch it. But
hey, get AMC Plus. You can stream it.
Oh. Perhaps I will.
And just let me know when we should end this, because I have the perfect way to hand it back to Josh.
Well, I guess I'll just say that, yeah, that's what we've been thankful for. And I thank you. If Robert Kirkman, if you're out there listening, thanks for making my life something special.
You should when this episode eventually goes live, you should just retweet it on the VGU account, Adam.
Oh, definitely. I certainly will.
But that means everything we're talking about has to be cut from the episode. so he thinks it's genuine.
Aww.
But of course it is genuine.
Yes. No, absolutely. I'm very it's one of those things, like, I wouldn't be me without that series, without the things that he's created. So I'm thankful that, I mean, hell, I'm thankful that Image gave him a space to really just kind of blossom as a creator. And yeah, that's that. So back to you, Al.
Before I hand this back to Josh, to MacGyver back into the grand scheme of the episode, I rarely tell a story because the story, thing I mentioned about my uncle and, like, going to the same school as Ron DeFeo.
Yeah.
It's just something that I didn't think I needed to be told at the time, but this has nothing to do with, it's not as dark as Ron DeFeo. And if you don't know who that is, good. Don't.
don't
Google it. Back when me, Javon, Davon, and Marlon, and Jake, and Andrew, and a bunch of other people were working over at Gamers Itch, Javon was working at, because Javon has seemingly worked everywhere. He's the Han Solo of people, or Harrison Ford / Han Solo of people I know. He worked at a place, I won't put on a blast, but he worked at a place that he promised, I'll be able to get you an exclusive when they eventually announce that Walking Dead game that Kirkman is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm literally, I think either in school, because I think it happened when I was either home or at school, one of the two. And I see IGN post, or I think it must have been IGN, because it just says Walking Dead Telltale game announced. I think it was up at noon, like with Greg Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I just clenched my fist and just shook at the sky, shouting, Javon! And Josh, the episode is yours.
Oh boy, wasn't that great? I have no clue because I am recording this literally right after I recorded mine, so I don't know what to expect from Alan or Graydon yet. But this is the outro, so I'm going to do what I normally do here, and that's stutter and suffer through the outro section, because despite having done this for well over a year now, I still cannot just get the flow of this down right. If you like what you hear, please spread the word. You can rate, you can review, all that's appreciated. But what's more important to me is hopefully I can help more people learn things about comics to get them more interested in different stuff that they maybe were not aware of, or maybe something that they didn't previously know that might spark them to read a book or learn about a creator or reread something. So spread Hyper Time around. Get people to check it out if they haven't already. I know I appreciate it. Alan would appreciate it. Yeah, all that helps the podcast grow. Don't forget to follow Hyper Time the Podcast on Twitter at Hyper Time Pod. If you have questions or topic suggestions, you can always reach out to me there. Send me a DM, just send me a tweet, whatever works. I can't promise I'll get to the topic right away, but I will definitely put it down and I would research it. to the best of my ability, at least. We also have, as you probably heard in my thank you section, we do have video game content that you can check out as well over on VGU.TV. We also have a YouTube page, VGU TV, there as well. There is two. Look for the one that has more recent stuff on there. So if you're into video game stuff, please like and subscribe, and hopefully we can give you something that you would enjoy watching. We put quite a bit up there usually. We also have a VGU Twitter at VGU_TV. We also have multiple podcasts, such as Players Club Podcast, which is Emmett and Alan. And we also have Win, which is the Week in News podcast, which has Graydon, Alan, and typically Raul. Gary's sometimes in there. I feel like they've been having a lot of trouble trying to get stuff out. So they also have a Twitter account as well, at VGUWinPod. My personal Twitter is jmille99. That's jmille99. Alan is on Twitter at the Alan Muir. That's at the Alan Allan and Muir Muir. I don't have his Twitter pulled up, so I am not going to just pick and choose what tweet of the week it is. So we will pass that up this time. But I'll make sure he has one for our next episode. But yes, thank you all. I hope you all have a, assuming you celebrate it, I hope you all have a great Thanksgiving. If you don't celebrate it, just have a good Thursday, and we will see you back in a couple weeks. The plan is to do the Electric Superman story arc. I have a feeling that's going to be a beefier episode, but we're not going to talk about everything that happens during that run because it is a year-long story arc, and I'm not going to make everyone suffer through an issue-by-issue breakdown. So it's going to be a little bit different, but very informative about how things worked. Again, thank you all for everything. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope you all have something that you are thankful for as well. And at the very least, I will see you further down the hyper time. Take care, everyone. Bye.
This has been a VGU.TV production. For all of the hottest hot takes and other opinions on video games, music, and a lot more, tune in to VGU.TV.